Welcome to On the Line with the AMA, the official podcast of the American Motorcyclist Association. I'm Alexandra Terhorst. Today we're joined by two remarkable women, Haley Bell, founder of the Women Riders World Relay and the recipient of the 2019 AMA Motorcyclist of the Year Award, and Liza Miller, founder of one of the nation's first community motorcycle cooperatives, the Recycle Garage in Santa Cruz, and creator of the Motorcycles and Misfits podcast. Miller received a Friend of the AMA Award in 2019. Here are Liza and Haley talking about how each got their start in motorcycling.
Haley Bell, I can't believe I'm talking to you here in person. Well, Zoom.
Not quite. I wish it was in person, Liza, but yeah, it's good to see your lovely face again.
Hey, and what a great opportunity this is just to kind of deep dive and get to know each other even better and to share our stories.
We know each other too much as it is, Liza. Like we do. We know we've been there. We've gone to the deepest, darkest corners of friendship, haven't we already? This could be a bit, you know, out there if we're going even deeper than that.
Well, we did a thing. We did a big thing together, you know, planned and executed an Around the World Relay, which may in fact be the largest thing we either of us do in our lives. I just feel bad for you being so young, knowing that there's nothing else to look forward to. Like that's it.
It's a slippery slope downhill now, isn't it? Like, you know, I feel like I've had my midlife crisis at 29. So I started young.
I want to know more about how you got started on, as you call it, motorbike riding.
It all started back when I was very little, Haley. And there's a couple of bikers in our family. There was my dad, my brother, and my cousins. And I always had like a real fascination with them. We used to go around to my cousin Rob's house, and he lives in the Isle of Man, and climb up his bike and then, you know, be hysterically laughing when we're revving the engine and probably near enough blowing it up because we've got no concept of just being gentle with bikes. So there was like this little excitement around bikes, but my sort of real passion never really developed until later on. And the reason being was I'd gone away, I'd done some traveling, I'd moved to different countries. I was moving country every 6 months and teaching windsurfing. So I never really settled and I never had any kind of income. I mean, I was living off 50 euros a week. There was no space for anything other than food and booze. And so I came back to the UK, and that's when it started really sort of ingraining in me. An ex-boyfriend rode, I went on the back of his Aprilia 2.0 once, and that was it. It was just like, ooh, light bulb moment. This is something that I can get my adrenaline kicks on whenever I want. It's like I don't have to go to a mountain to do snowboarding. I don't have to go to a lake or the sea to do windsurfing. It's literally here. You want adrenaline? Go. You've got it here. And it just stuck. And I've very much been a flitter in terms of hobbies. I've done everything. I've tried everything once. And I tend to sort of flit through different things that I like. But this just stuck. And I think the reason why it stuck so much was because of the community that came with it. And that sort of sense of family and just feeling like you have a purpose and that there are people there to help you and support you. And that's what really sort of made motorcycling stick with me. And yeah, here we are today. What about you, Liza?
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, you went the adrenaline angle and I went the different way. When people say, how'd you get in riding? My response is, I was born this way, which sounds like a joke, but it's true. I can remember being obsessed with motorcycles as very, very young, like leaning out the window of the station wagon to talk to Hell's Angels on bikes and say, hey, man, nice hog, you know, when I was like five, and talking anyone I could who had a motorcycle into giving me a ride. The really weird thing is I remember like on my 10th birthday, my dad's friend showed up and he gave me a ride around the block. But that was so memorable for me. It was years later that I was able to realize that that was a CB750. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I remembered it in such detail that I was able to identify the model of the bike. So for me, it was, I think, about freedom and not the norm, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Not traditional, but freedom. For me, it's freedom. It's flying. It's not adrenaline. So Yeah, for me, it was as early as I could, any opportunity, getting somebody to give me a ride, show me how. And then finally, as a kid, talking to my dad and letting me get a mini bike and going up from there. Yeah, I've just always wanted a ride. Always.
See, it's funny. Did you like start with lower CC bikes and sort of progress upwards and go through the range?
Well, when I was like five and I talked the neighbor kid into letting me ride down a hill on his dirt bike without it running, and he was running alongside me, you know, because he didn't trust I would crash. I mean, I'm talking really young. But no, my famous story is when I was 12, my friend's dad had a Suzuki GS650, so pretty large bike at the time. And I was begging him to teach me to ride it. And so he laid it down on the ground and said, if you can pick it up, I'll teach you to ride. I was 12 years old, but I was already a giant. I was like 5'6", you know, at 12. And it took me a while. He went in the house, left me there, and I sat there and figured out the leverage. And I picked that bike up, finally put it on the kickstand, ran in the house and said, let's go. And he took me to a parking lot and taught me how to ride that GS650. Okay. I mean, from there, anything was easy.
The Women Riders World Relay, or WRWR as it's known, was a brilliant concept that took a tremendous amount of planning, coordination, and teamwork. But how did the idea come about?
In the time that we did the relay, it took a year to go around the world, and you were at the beginning and the middle and then just at the end. So I know you did the UK portion too at the beginning, and that was just the very beginning. There was challenges there, starting in the winter, dealing with rain, getting lost, dealing with wind. And then to participate here in the US, I think we did 18 days. Was it anything at all like you imagined when you had this idea?
No, not at all. It was exactly that. So it was an idea. And if you knew me beforehand, and you will know now, but I'm full of mad ideas. And there's lots of them coming, yes. They come and go. And this one kind of stuck. And I had this mad idea, and other people started thinking it was mad, but kind of cool too. And then people just started getting involved. And you and Shana and Michelle and Maria and everybody started getting on the team in terms of organizing it. And I was like, okay, so I don't have to do this mad idea on my own, which would be impossible to organize. I've now got this team of people who are equally as crazy as I am.
Enablers. That's all we were. Yeah. Enablers.
You are enabling my crazy idea addiction. And yeah, there's no way that any one person could have done this. It was all down to having such a solid team of leaders and team of just go out there and do it us, if that makes sense. And I never thought that it would be this big. And do you know what? It's not even the fact that it was that big. I never thought that it would have that much of an impact on women's lives,
yeah,
on a personal scale. And so many people were so deeply affected by it, and this was the biggest thing that they'd ever done in their life, and it was the most proud that they've ever been of themselves in their lives. And to touch somebody on an emotional state across so many different people like that is, you know, you sit back, and that's why it takes us a long time to allow it all to sink in, because you see the emotional value that WRWR has with each individual that participated.
So I'll admit something here. Prior to this, I had never really ridden with a lot of women. Growing up riding as a woman, I never thought I was any different from anyone else because I rode with all the guys. I didn't know I was different, right? Mm-hmm. And all my riding partners are usually men, with the exception of some exceptionally good riding females. Mm-hmm. So for me, there was a little bit of, it's going to be a bunch of women who only like to go ride, you know, 50 miles on the weekend. I know. I apologize for thinking that, because what we encountered were women who stepped up. And true, the route that I created, not just here in the US, but the global route, was not easy. None of it was meant to be easy. It was meant to be a test. It was meant to push boundaries, to make women better, stronger riders, to know that they can. Here in the US, we saw that. We saw women show up on bikes that shouldn't have done it, but we saw that around the world. And especially when you're talking about some of the riders like Yosan, who had to ride alone through many parts of Europe, and then into Asia, where I'm very sorry, but we had to plan it during the monsoon season. And and the fact that throughout the world, there was women, and sometimes it was a large group, like in Australia, and sometimes it was a single woman. But everyone knew that this was just as important to keep it going. And everyone, day in, day out, kept it going. And to see things like the women writers in Pakistan, which there's not a lot of women writers. There's a few who are famous. And we were lucky to get Gulia Shan Tariq, who's one of those women. But then to see the videos of these other women writing with her and knowing that this is in its infancy, women writing in Pakistan. And I know this because I go ride in Pakistan and I do tours there, and I'm doing another one this coming fall. And to see more women writers every time I go, which is very rare, but it's so cool to see women writing in its infancy and growing. It's brilliant. So for me, the World Relay really opened up my eyes to the women riders around the world, how many women want to ride, who just need that introduction, just need that idea, just need that role model to know that they can, to seeing some of these really badass riders who tour and race and do all this stuff. That was amazing for me, I have to say.
And isn't it funny how you can sit there? I mean, we were busy planning all the routes and keeping the baton going and making sure everybody was in communications and sorting all the logistics. But then we sit there and we have the Facebook Lives and the videos and the photos coming up on the group. And isn't it amazing? Like when we were sat there sort of watching the different cultures come out and the different styles of riding, the different styles of bike, the different sort of communities that were shining through all around the world. It was so amazing to see that this passion that we have here in this country or in the States or wherever is so, so well loved across the world.
For Haley and Liza, the WRWR represented a number of firsts, challenges, and some very funny stories.
I'm wondering, in the time during this relay, how many firsts you encountered on a motorcycle?
Loads, loads. Riding in a big group like that was completely new to me. The only time that I've really ridden in groups, and it wasn't really riding in groups, it was riding to a group with a few people behind, blah, 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 was for rallies and for protests. So to ride in formation in a group, in such a regimented sort of manner, for me, and it sounds daft, doesn't it, as I'm organizing a world relay alongside you girls, like, and I don't really ride groups, but I didn't. I'm a solo rider, and I'll go out with one or maybe two others a lot of the time. So group riding was a big new one for me. I'm trying to think what else.
I know one.
Go on.
When we stopped at the Indian factory in Iowa, you said, I really wanted to try one of those, was it the FTR?
Yeah, flat tracker.
Which you had, when we were lining up these bikes to ride, thank you, Indian, for the sponsorship. You said, oh, I want to ride that. And I said, absolutely not. I remember I called in and he said, doesn't matter what she requests, do not give her an FTR. I don't want her complaining about her sore ass the entire time cross country. So when we were at the Indian factory, they pulled out an FTR and you're like, can I try it?
I think in the UK, it wasn't available to test ride at that point. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be the first person when I get back home to test ride the FTR.
You took off on those city streets and just pow, took off. And at one point, you came back past the factory. Yow, past. Yow, there goes Haley.
Well, you've got to test it properly, haven't you?
I think another great moment was riding a giant Indian motorcycle across the US.
Yeah, that Indian. So that's like the picture of, like, if you say you're going to ride across the United States of America, that's what you think of, don't you? You think of either a big Harley or an Indian. For me, it was an Indian because I think they're great and the fantastic company.
And you were on the Chieftain, was it?
The Chieftain Dark Horse, yeah.
Yeah.
It was an absolute beast. And like I got on the bike, and because I've never rode a bagger. before, ever. Like in the UK, the roads are far too small and narrow for baggers. Like it just wouldn't be. You just don't really see them here.
And should we point out that you are wafer thin?
Yeah, so I'm 5'6" and I'm on a good day, I'm 8 stone. So I think at the time of the relay, I was 7 stone with the stress. So I look like a child that had ran away with the dad's bike. But this thing was huge. And like the riding position is so different because I've come from a background of sports bikes and dirt bikes. So the riding position, you've got your legs sort of out, sort of stretched in front of you a bit. And, you know, you sort of sat back and we had gadgets on them, Liza. I had speakers on my bike. Like all my bikes are carved bike. They're falling off, like they're falling to pieces. That's my bikes. My bikes don't even have a clock to tell the time on it. It's like you get on the bike and it's a time warp. You don't know where you are. You don't know what day it is. You don't know what time it is. And this thing had speakers on it. I was like, oh. And it had cruise control. I was like, wow.
Mine had a cup holder.
I was so jealous of your cup holder, especially when we were going through minus 10 degrees Celsius. I was so jealous of the coffee cup holder.
And what did you think about seeing the country that way on a bike? I mean, there were long stretches of plains and mountains, not just all the good bits, but everything in between. What do you think?
You know what? Like, so for me, an adventure isn't an adventure unless it's a challenge. And a holiday isn't a holiday unless it's a challenge as well. Like anything that I sort of get enjoyment out of, I have to suffer a bit to get that enjoyment. And that ride was a challenge. It was a big challenge. It was amazing to see all the different states that we were going through by motorcycle because there's, well, a couple of things. One, you've got all your senses available to you when you're riding a bike. So, you know, you've got the smells of the, you know, the olive oils, you've got the strawberry fields, you've got, you know, just different smells of different places as you're going through. The oil in Texas, I was like, wow, like it's really pungent when you've come out of different places.
But isn't that what makes it such an amazing experience riding by motorcycle, is getting all those sensations?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when you're sat on a bike as well, and the listeners will know this, obviously, if you're a biker, but you know, you're looking around and you feel like a little pea in this tiny little world, just tootling along, rolling down the road, and there's these huge mountains like all around you, and you just feel so small and exposed. And that's what I love about riding by bike and going through this dramatic scenery, because you just feel so insignificant on the road.
Yeah, it was a great experience for me as well. I've done cross country, but as you said, it's great to have it be a challenge. And for me, the challenge was getting all of these people from point A to point B. Now, I was responsible for organizing the US portion of the relay. And yes, I didn't make it easy. I mean, there were many 500-mile days, mm-hmm, and in all kinds of weather. And we had to get to our destination. You know, snow, sleet, didn't matter. We were going. We had to get everyone there. We were almost like the shepherds and these are our sheep. It was really cool to see that you took it not just as a challenge, but I think you really took pride in the fact that you would corral those people in the morning who weren't confident. You would say, who's not confident? Who's got concerns? Who's on a smaller bike? And you would kind of coach them and you would take them under your wing and say, follow me.
It was so good, like having such a different mix. When we started planning this route, like, Liza, you'll back me up on this, we were all like, oh, we can't have beginner riders on this. Like, we just can't, because it's too long a day. We need to have a level of experience. And similarly, we were like, we need big bikes, because, you know, you need more fuel stops for smaller bikes if they've got smaller tanks. So, but then when we got together and we met up in each morning, and we've got a complete new set of riders every morning, and you see the same sort of feelings and anxieties going through the group, like, oh, this is a big thing, like, oh, I'm not so sure about this. And a lot of people hadn't ridden in groups before, and it was such an amazing thing to take a bunch of women and watch them grow throughout a day on the, like, in confidence in a day on a motorcycle. And the reason why they grew so confident was because everybody was the same and everybody had the same feelings and everybody was, you know, together in it, and they had a purpose and they knew that backing out wasn't an option. They had to keep going. Nobody was getting left behind, and they knew the reason why they had to get the baton to the next stop. And I think that sort of motivation and that end goal and sense of pride really kicked in. And they were amazing. It was such a nice thing to be able to just give little tips as we're going along and just help boost somebody's confidence. You know, it was great.
You know, we experienced a lot of challenges and things on our trip. One of the weirdest obstacles I've ever encountered on a motorcycle is on that trip. And I'm wondering if you remember this moment as we're riding through, I believe it was Texas. We're coming over a crest of a hill and then I shout, "House! House!" You want to explain what we encountered on the road?
Oh, yeah. The giant house on the trailer. Basically, there's an entire house filling all the lanes of the motors of like this freeway, like taking up the whole lot. Like we're either going through the dining room or we're not going through it at all.
It was two lanes each way with a divider in the middle. And they were moving a house on one of those giant, like an actual house moving on a truck. And for some reason, they had the truck behind them with the little lights and the sign saying "stay back." Nothing in front of them. So we come over a crest and there's a house across the entire road. And we're all on comms and I'm just going, "House, house."
I'm like, "What?
What?
What? House."
See, and we had to go in the breakdown lane to go around the house. What were some of the other highlights?
Moonshine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so for people who don't know, we created a list for Haley. Coming to the U.S., there's a lot of really cool things to experience. And so we created a list of things she had to experience while here that were truly American. One of the things was shoot a gun. And we arranged, like, you shot some big guns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to blow up Tannenite.
He blew up Tannenite. Somebody brought moonshine. We went to a cowboy store, bought you a whole outfit.
I was literally like going home in full cowboy gear.
I'm trying to remember what some of the other things. Oh, we got apple pie a la mode. That was one of our stops.
We did.
We had to stop and get some pie.
What was that? Twinkie? Is that the thing that's still inside me even when I'm 8 years old? Yeah, it tasted really good.
Kind of a Twinkie.
Yeah, I can still feel that.
Yeah, you had the true American experience.
It was so
good. Had a British experience when mm-hmm. I came over there.
I got you fish and chips.
Yes, except there's a weird thing. I don't understand why you guys put peas in all the food. Peas.
Why is that? I'm going to get you into peas.
I hate peas. Haley heard me complain about peas. Why is there peas in the potatoes? I don't get it. We went to the Ace Cafe. That to me was like Mecca. To be able to visit the Ace Cafe, the origin of the cafe racer, and just such deep roots in the motorcycle history. I mean, to this day, that was really a big deal for me to be there. And then to have all the women show up and have our big event there, that was really cool.
The World Relay may be over, but for Liza and Haley, it was a launching pad for even more ideas that support and expand opportunities for women motorcyclists.
It was a great experience, but it's not the only thing that we do. I run my podcast, MotorcyclesandMisfits.com. I've started Rev Sisters with Shana Michelle, mm-hmm. who I met during the organizing of the relay. And we are now hosting film festivals. You can go to RevSisters.com, check that out. And you've continued, you've got all these crazy ideas to keep going. Do you want to talk about any ideas?
Yeah, I think it's quite a good thing to talk about, just given the state that we're in at the minute in the world and the struggles that some mm-hmm. people are sort of facing. So being a bit of a nomad and a bit of a wanderer, to be penned in a house in lockdown is my idea of hell. So it's been difficult. And I'd come out of WRWR, we'd finished the the relay. And as Liza pointed out before, it's almost like a decompression stage that you go through, because we had been so hard worked, so under stress and all out for the last 2 years of this relay. And then it all just came to a stop and the world stopped and we're not allowed to go out and ride on our bikes and you've got to stay at home and you can't have events and all this sort of stuff.
And when we say the world stopped, we had our finale with the baton arriving in the UK. We had our big finale party and it was weeks later, just weeks, that the world shut down. Like we shoehorned this relay in by luck.
I think we're responsible for a little bit of the UK's coronavirus, because we had our finale ceremony with 50 countries attending. Oh, no. And literally 2 weeks later we were in a lockdown. So but it was funny because we had this finale ceremony and then it just, the whole world just stopped, and that was really difficult to deal with. So I was like, right, I was speaking to Liza and Shanna and Michelle and things. And one of the things that Liza sort of mentioned to me was, you know, how much you enjoyed teaching the girls. And I was like, yeah, do you know what? I really did enjoy that. So I started doing my motorcycle instructor's license. And I passed it over here in the UK. We have three stages essentially to a motorcycle license. You have your CBT, which is your compulsory basic training, which enables you to ride up to a 125cc, but not on the motorway, and not without a you can't have a pillion on it. And then you have your mod 1 and your mod 2, which basically progresses you to 600cc or 49 brake horsepower, and then on to your full unrestricted license.
You know what our system is here, right?
Yeah, nothing. Get on it and go.
Answer these 10 questions. Here's your piece of paper. Good luck.
Yeah. It's funny. We've spoke about the different sort of license and things. And yeah, in the UK, it's difficult to get a motorcycle license. You do have to go through a vigorous testing process, and you won't just get handed a license. You do have to earn it.
I respect the system there, but I also appreciate that we don't have to do that. We just do it here, right? So your ideas, what do you want to do?
Yeah, so I started in the process of setting up with my partner a motorcycle hub, because what's happening here in the UK is, in the north of England, a lot of motorcycling scene is disappearing and it's all being moved down south. And I don't like that. I'm from the north of England and northerners know how to do it properly. So I wanted to bring it back up north.
That makes you a monkey, I believe.
I'm a northern monkey.
There
exactly
it is.
That. With coronavirus and everything, we initially started thinking about like the cafe and sort of a garage and, you know, a place for people to come and hang in the winter in particular and just get the bike fixed really and meet new people and go for rides. And then we all got shut down. So it's been like a real trying process of trying to like navigate the system as to how can I continue with my passion and continue with motorcycling when we're so restricted, and motorcycling is a physical sport, and I don't want to take away from that. As much as I think online things are great at the minute, for me, motorcycling is getting on a motorcycle and riding, and that's what I would want to do as a career. So yeah, we're looking at setting up a shop at the minute as well, just doing specialized online parts, little quirky things that not many people know about that we've personally found really useful over the years, whether it's tools, different things for bike, helmets, just new and upcoming things that are out there that not many people know about. So yeah, we're in the process of setting that up at the minute.
That's pretty cool. And you know, with Rev Sisters, we're doing these film festivals, but our goal is to open up women's moto camps. And again, it's something that I really did enjoy meeting all these women riders, but I recognized that a lot of women just need to be given the opportunity. And I want to help women wrench to work on their bikes and to ride dirt and to ride track and to expand and to try more things.
Earning recognition for their motorcycling accomplishments, especially from the AMA, was a special moment for Liza and Haley.
I joked earlier about going downhill, that this being like the biggest thing you've done. But for me, there's something that I am very, very proud of, equally proud of. And I think maybe for you too, because we both have won awards from the AMA. And I know for me personally, the AMA is something that's been around my entire life. And I hold it in such high esteem, and I recognize these Hall of Famers. So to be recognized by them and to be given Friend of the AMA Award was such a big moment for me. Such a big moment for me. You remember when I was like announcing, like, guess what? I'm so excited.
So excited.
So excited. It means a lot to me. And I have it proudly displayed on the mantle behind me. But you won an award. Let's talk about that, what that was like.
Basically, the AMA had contacted me to do an interview, to what I thought was an interview. So they'd like sent a photographer around and everything. And I had this really cool guy come up and he was like, yeah, let's get this spot. I was fixing the bike anyway. I was like, while you're here, if you want to get some actual photos, I do need to fix this on the bike. So I'll just fix the bike and you can do that. And he's like, yes, cool. And he was great. And then he went away and they said they were going to do an article, did a bit of an interview, and that was it. And I didn't think anything of it. And then Liza rang me up and was like, oh my God. And I was like, what? And she was like, oh my God, you've not seen. I was like, what? She's like, you've won AMA Motorcyclist of the Year Award. And I was like, what? But what?
What's that?
What? And then I'm looking, Travis Pastrana was AMA Motorcyclist of the year before. I'm like, am I going to have to learn how to do like backflips on the motor?
Yes.
Just to make up for this. Like, I'm not.
And you're
level.
Game for it, aren't you?
I'm totally game for it, yeah. But I'm not there yet. And it was just like, to be given any recognition for what we've done with WRWR is amazing. I absolutely take my hat off to the team. It's absolutely a team effort, WRWR is. But we did work our asses off and we got somewhere. But to be recognised as the Motorcyclist of the Year was just a complete shock.
And I believe as the first non-American to win the American Motorcycle Association Cyclist of the Year. That's kind of
yeah,
cool.
But I've shot guns and drank moonshine, so I'm basically an American anyway.
Basically.
Our thanks to Haley Bell and Liza Miller, two groundbreaking motorcyclists with many more adventures in their future.
So Liza is the only person I know that can actually fall asleep on a motorcycle whilst filling it up with fuel.
And no, yeah, well, yes.
On the Line with the AMA is a production of the American Motorcyclist Association. Since 1924, the AMA has been promoting the motorcycle lifestyle and protecting the future of motorcycling. To learn more, visit AmericanMotorcyclist.com.